Hey, y'all, how's it going? Good, I guess. Hang on a second, I'm typing something. Oh, I'm just going a bit till I get. Hey, you guys should join up the chat room, dude. That's where I was just typing to the chat room, guys. Hey, chat room, guys. Good to see you, man. It's scotthorton.org/chat. Some good dudes in there, man. Hang out, talk about things. You know, if you want. scotthorton.org/chat. If you have a Chatzilla or XChat or Pigeon or some kind of external chat type application, then you're looking for a IRC Freenode channel, hashtag Scott Horton Show. That's what this show is, the Scott Horton Show. Libertarian foreign policy, mostly. Like my slogan? It's pretty good. Yeah, that's what this show is. So, anyway, yeah, we'll have a lot of that today. Sam Husseini is going to be on the show because he wrote a thing. Sanders foreign policy. Backing Saudi intervention. Now, my problem is, I don't know much about Bernie Sanders other than he's just a Democrat senator to me, the same as all the others. And, you know, supposedly he's a little bit better than some on some things or something, but yeah, I don't really believe in politicians much. I like Ron Paul, but that's it. And I'm talking going all the way back through all of American history. So, screw him. Of course he's horrible on everything. What is he? A pure libertarian? No. So what does that mean? That means he's wrong on a lot of incredibly huge things. And in this case, his position on the war, well, anyway, I'll let Sam Husseini talk about it, but anyway, Bernie Sanders. I wonder what the Democrats are going to do, you know? Hillary Clinton is just not electable. And I think, you know, I can see why liberals and progressives are kind of married to the idea that, oh, yes, she is. She's going to be the first woman president and all this. But in reality, no, she's not, because nobody likes her. She's not likable enough. And so what are they going to do? You know, I'm trying to get Jim Webb on the show. I got in a Twitter fight with his staff this morning, but then they followed me. So I thought, well, you know, I'll invite him on the show and I'll tell him what I think. Maybe if Rand Paul has too much concrete where his brain is supposed to be, maybe this guy Webb, even though he's already really screwed up by coming out against the Iran deal, maybe it's not too late to take it back. Maybe he can just say, you know what, I reread it and it actually is pretty good, and then just go from there and be good on things. Yeah. He's got a track record of being good on some things, you know? And he has a lot of potential. It's already too late. But I thought, you know what? Maybe if I fought with him about it, I could convince him that it's not too late and that he should just forget he ever said that. He's a politician. People overlook stuff like that. Nuclear deal's great. Hillary Clinton's a warmonger. You're the right-wing conservative peacenik Democrat. You see how he's got his right flank covered. Right? Vietnam veteran, former Secretary of the Navy, but a Democrat. So you can't call him a hippie, even if he's for peace on every issue. Still can't call him a hippie. And so, good. That's at least could make for an interesting conversation, isn't it, in a presidential election year, right? If he would have played that right, boy, did he just play the wrong card on that. I don't know. Anyway, I'm trying to get him on the show because, I don't know. I'd like to see an interesting primary debate season. At least. I mean, the guy's a Democrat. He's horrible on a million things too, but I just want to get a good fight going about the empire. It's the same argument about Rand. Doesn't he know that everyone else is so bad on foreign policy that all he has to do is explain what their foreign policy is in plain English to people, and he kicks their ass? You know what these guys support? Here's what they support. And then go down the very short list, and people will go, what? That's crazy. Maybe neutrality is the best policy. That ought to be an easy case to make in 2015, man. 2016. Come on. Anyway. Democrats. So Sam Husseini's coming on the show. And then, I don't know, I got a bunch of other invites out, but I guess, you know, I don't know, including Jim Webb. We'll see what happens with any of these. Yeah, in the chat room, somebody said yesterday he went and met Rand, kind of in the rope line, shake hands real quick, kind of snuck in a comment. The reason you got no excitement, Rand, is because you keep running away from your father's positions. Knock that off and you'll do better. Bye. You know, he got to just say one thing quick. I'm sure Rand probably just resented it. But check this out, man. He's got 2%, according to the new Quinnipiac poll. Trump is at 28. Carson at 12. Bush at 7. Rubio 7. Cruz 7. Walker 6. Fiorina 5. Kasich 5. Huckabee 3. I'm still not to Rand Paul yet. Get it? I'm going down the list, and I'm still not to Rand yet. Kasich 5. Huckabee 3. Paul, 2. Oh, and Christie's at 4, so they wrote this out of order. Christie at 4. Huckabee at 3. Paul at 2. Perry at 1. Santorum 1. Jindal and Graham both with 0. So, he is, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11th. He is in 11th place. Rand Paul is out of the top 10. And you know what he's telling himself right now, too. Man, if only I had sold out worse and pandered more, backstabbed my dad sooner. And why did I ever say those reasonable things about Iran? I'll never live those down. Why, oh, why was I good on Libya and Syria? Now nobody likes me. Yeah, good job, Rand. You blew it. Capiche? You blew it. 2%. And of course, if you look at Lou Rockwell's political theater blog, and you can tell Lou's polite, but he basically, you know, in between the lines, in other words, says, look at this. You know, Rand refusing to take responsibility. Why isn't he doing any good? Because of the question, the wording of the poll. Because of the media. Because of Donald Trump. You know, I don't know. I get sick of saying I told you so about him, but it, you know, really the reason for my obsession is because I still want to believe his last name is Paul, for crying out loud. You know that even if he disagrees, that he's heard the real stuff his whole life. So for him to just reject it all, for him to be Bernie Sanders up there, for him to be Mike Huckabee up there, is, it's just a crying shame. And beyond that, I just can't help, I just can't shake the idea that he could say, maybe those people who hate me are right, and I should just memorize my father's articles and just do that. And then if he would do that, just think how wonderful it would be. What if it was a Webb versus Rand election? Who's the bigger piece, Nick? You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. and, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
Hey, Kit, did I read that right? You're saying that Rand said that? That we're fighting against the Iranians in Syria but for them in Iraq? Because he must have got that from me then, right? If he said it that way? Did that one seep through? I mean, I assume that Rand Paul's staff has my Twitter on mute, right? Wouldn't you? You might. Already. Well, man, so see? Damn it! But this is why I freaking get so frustrated, because here, you know, either quit getting it right at all, or get it right, you know? Stop mixing getting it right with a bunch of stupidity. You're driving me nutso out of my brain hole. I don't like it. Let me make sure I'm understanding Kit there in the chat room. I think that's what he said. Is that what you said? Yeah, he only used it when he was down to 2% of the polls. But wait, so, I mean, this is a huge thing. Conceivably, possibly, if he's made a decision that my strategy of moving to the right sucks, it was wrong, I guess maybe I have to change my mind now and move to the libertarian. And that's the only way anybody will like me, if I just go out there and tell the truth and oppose everything like a good libertarian would. I wonder how much better I might do if I try that instead. And see, here's the thing, Rand. There's a role model for you here. You know him. You know him better than any of us. Do like your father. Get up there and tell the truth. The brave, unpopular, contradictory truth to the major narrative. And kick their ass. That's one advantage Rand has over Ron, is Ron is such a gentleman. He would never insult someone or attack someone personally. He didn't say, let me tell you something, Giuliani. He just said, hey, listen, let me explain about, you know, Isaac Newton and actions and reactions. But Rand can fight in a way. If he's on the side of right, it's all right, you know? Attacking Trump for not being loyal enough to the Republican Party. You know what? I would just drop that line of attack. That's what Republican voters like about him. That's where the Tea Party came from, right? They said, well, we can't really make our own party, but so let's make our conservative, populist, working and middle class group separate and distinct from the corporate chieftains who rule the party and rule us. That's what the Tea Party was. That's what Donald Trump is tapping into. That's who put Rand Paul into the Senate. Instead he goes, teacher, he won't promise not to run as a third party. Well, hey, 4 years ago, that was a line of attack against Ron Paul. That you swear to God you won't run as a third party? They would ask him that every day. It was like the only reason anybody interviewed him. As though that was the most important principle of a Republican candidate. Being a company man. But anyway, if I'm reading Kit in the chat room right, who went to this thing and went and met Rand and shook his hand, it sounds like maybe he paraphrased a line from me there, man. Which I'm glad to give. That's, you know, would come from the Rand Paul thing, right? Where I wrote that thing. I mean, the Tom Woods thing. Tom Woods asked me to write talking points for the debate. And I said, here. So maybe he looked at that, huh? I don't know. But, yeah. Anyway. You ever see the Bruce Lee movie where he kicks a bunch of people's asses at once? That could be Rand Paul. If he would just be like his father, only a senator and younger. Hmm? Yeah. It's not too late, right? It's still only 2015. Just forget all the stupid stuff you said and just get it right, man. You know, Michael Scheuer has an article at nonintervention.com. And he can be hawkish, man. There are times where Michael Scheuer says, look, our government has created so many enemies for us, we have no choice but to annihilate them. And make you just go, oh, come on. Put your, you know, turn down your nationalism 7 notches, dude. Please, you're killing me. But he has an article, and he's such an alarmist about Al-Qaeda types, Islamic State or Al-Qaeda itself. And I think with pretty good reason, actually. And he has this long thing about, oh my freaking God, I can't believe it. Just what a horrible President Obama is, and just what a horrible job he's done of spreading, or what a great job he's done in a horrible way, of spreading the jihad all across the Middle East. From the moment he killed bin Laden, he said, there's no such thing as the bin Ladenites anymore, all that's over, and then he turned around and he backed them in Libya and Syria. And blew them up into the biggest thing that George W. Bush couldn't even take credit for the kind of, you know, the growth and installation of the caliphate, or at least the Islamic State, in the way that Obama has nurtured, spread the whole thing, got rid of Gaddafi, spread the jihad down into Mali, and then those Al-Qaeda guys from the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group working directly with, and I know this sounds like BS talking points, but I read real journalism. I can't remember who it was anymore. But there was some real good journalism, 2 or 3 different stories that I found where, like, no, really, this really happened, where the Boko Haram guys came up to Mali and met with the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group guys and all became buddies in the lawless jihadistan that is, or at least was and still kind of is, northern Mali there. A land the size of Texas, which is huge in case you've never been to Texas. And anyway, and then Scheuer says, we only have one choice left. And I swear to you, as I was reading this, I thought, oh my God, is he going to say drop an atom bomb on Mosul? Please, Michael Scheuer, don't say drop an atom bomb on Mosul. And you know what he said? He goes, neutrality. That's it. You got to call the whole thing off. No more intervention at all. At all. Just stop. And I'm sure he might add something horrible if he was here on the show today about just sit back and let them all kill each other. Well, no, that's not what we want. What we want is peace. But the region, the people, the local actors are going to have to work this out. Without American intervention on any side. We need a Swiss foreign policy right freaking now. And I think it's important to emphasize this point coming from Michael Scheuer, because he's a guy who basically, he is such an American nationalist, former CIA analyst. His job was finding enemies of America to kill. You know, that was his profession. And in his way of looking at things, people who are not Americans, particularly if they live in other countries, and they're nearby, plausibly nearby actual enemies of America, forget their human rights. No rights for you, dude. No humanity for you. You're near somebody needs killing? Goodbye. Tough luck. Here comes the daisy cutter. That's his point of view. He's not afraid to say that at all in any way. And here he's saying, just stop. That can't win. That can't win. Just call it off. Nonintervention.com. Look at it. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show.
I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our guest today is Sam Husseini. He's got a new one running at consortiumnews.com, and we'll have it at antiwar.com for you tomorrow. It's called Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Sam?
Good to be with you.
Good to finally talk to you after all this time. I've read you and followed you on Twitter for quite a few years now. And you've helped me out with a lot of guests with your morning email too, by the way, which I really appreciate.
Sure, from accuracy.org. Always a pleasure, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy, and this is particularly regarding what is to be done about the Islamic State in eastern Syria and western Iraq, or what used to be those places anyway, am I right?
Yeah, I think it still is those places, but yes.
Okay.
Whenever the Mideast comes up, generally almost, and especially when ISIS comes up, Sanders has basically been saying the Saudis need to get their hands dirty. These are rich countries run by rich families, and the future of Islam is at stake, and the soul of Islam is at stake, and they have to get out there, and they have to solve this problem themselves. That's almost a kind way of paraphrasing what he's been saying. What's wrong with this is that he's basically calling for more Saudi intervention in the region. Saudi Arabia is right now bombing Yemen. It is, you know, devastating that country that borders it. Saudi Arabia has been the haven for all of the ousted Arab dictators from Tunisia to Yemen after they got ousted. Mubarak was about to go to Saudi Arabia. They didn't want him to resign at all, and he finally did, and now he's, you know, sort of under pseudo house arrest in Egypt, and now they're backing the military dictatorship in Egypt. They've been sort of the most anti-democratic force in the Arab world here, and for decades now they've backed the teachings of the Wahhabi sect of Islam, which has basically given rise to Al Qaeda and ISIS. And so, why do we have a presumed progressive like Sanders, who is, you know, so articulate on, you know, economic issues and other issues, saying that we should turn over a large part of our Mideast policy, which I have a lot of problems with, to the autocratic Saudi regime?
Yeah. Well, now, so back to Sanders in just a second, but just to elaborate your point one step further, too, I think the most charitable explanation of the rise of the Islamic State and the Saudi role in that would be OOPS, and that their support for Ahrar al-Sham and other so-called, mythical moderates and whatever this whole time in the civil war in their determination to oust Assad has led to this massive blowback in the form of the Islamic State. And that's, you know, that I think is the most charitable explanation when, you know, we have Michael Flynn's affirmation of the DIA report and its importance in explaining that this is exactly what's going to happen if America and its allies continue upon the path of supporting the rebels in Syria, the memo from August of 2012.
Yeah, it's either, you know, extreme bungling, oops, as you say, or an insidious attempt in order to create failed states in the secular republics of the Arabic world, like Syria was.
And to create an Islamic State in its place, in fact.
To either create an Islamic State in its place or a failed state chaos, you know, which I think, you know, it might be, you know, serviceable to some players in the region and outside the region as well. Mm. And so you have this proxy war. But
Sanders is saying the Saudi ought to send their American trained and armed army to go and fight the Islamic State that the U.S. and Saudi at least accidentally created.
Yes, yes. And he tacitly concedes that our interventions in the Middle East helped create ISIS. It's kind of a bizarre thing because he's willing to admit that much. But then his response is that we shouldn't do this. Why should our boys from Vermont go over there to fight? Why should we bankroll this, let the Saudis bankroll it, let the Saudis man it, and in effect, he doesn't say this explicitly, we'll give diplomatic cover, maybe air cover, and so on and so forth. So it's sort of like trying to work out a scheme whereby we can continue the war machine without as much money and without any U.S. blood, you know, sort of let them kill each other kind of thing. I'm sure you saw the Sony hack email where, you know, the head of Sony actually said, you know, let them all kill each other. That was his analysis of the Middle East, and this is sort of being echoed in a sense by Sanders here. What's insidious about this is that, you know, Sanders is now the most prominent progressive on the national stage. So, if people want to give kudos to his campaign for raising issues of income inequality and so on, whether he wins or loses, he's putting those issues on the agenda. Well, I think he's also doing damage here. You know, he's been scant in his foreign policy pronouncements, and this is the foreign policy pronouncement that he has been most passionate about. You know, he's not out there really railing about even the military budget, even from a finance point of view, he's not railing about this. Yeah. And he certainly isn't, you know, being Martin Luther King and being talking about the madness of militarism, and he's certainly not being Jeremy Corbyn. If you follow what Jeremy Corbyn, who's fighting for the leadership in the Labour Party in Britain right now, he's really going after the Saudis and British arming of the Saudis, which is tiny compared to the U.S. arming of the Saudis.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, underlying all of this is he has to know better than this. I mean, you don't have to, they call it calculus or whatever, but this is basic arithmetic here. The Saudis invade Iraqi Sunnistan, and then what do the Iranians do? Right? I mean, there's nothing complicated, even, you know, pre-algebra here. This is basic math. You're talking about making the war worse.
Right, right. And you know, sort of you got the militarists on either side tacitly benefiting from that. Are we asking what Sanders is doing? Is he doing an oops? Is he being careless here, or is he being insidious here? I mean, what struck me is part of his pronouncements here. Some of his most viscerous pronouncements have been when he's gone on Wolf Blitzer's show on CNN. And Wolf Blitzer, as people may know, has a fairly long history of being not just pro-U.S. military intervention, but specifically fairly pro-Israeli. And there is a tacit, not so tacit anymore, Israeli-Saudi alliance in the Middle East. And so, you know, you in effect have Sanders using a platform in the U.S. media that is quite pro-Israeli to push this line as a progressive line, that this is what progressives should call for. This is very destructive in terms of what our movement thinking is going to be regarding the Middle East and what a possible meaningful dialogue can be between people in the United States and people in the Arab and Muslim worlds. Yeah. That the Saudis should run the show? Hell no. You know, Sanders is saying that the Saudis need to go out there and get their hands dirty. I'm saying the Saudis' hands are plenty dirty as it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
let's stop it.
All right, now, so I got a bunch more for you. With Sam Husseini on the other side of this break, you also stay tuned. He's at the Institute for Public Accuracy, and you can find this article at consortiumnews.com, Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy. More in a minute. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at mastersamuraitech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from mastersamuraitech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at mastersamuraitech.com.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I'm here live on the Liberty Radio Network from noon to 2 Eastern Time, 11 to 1 Texas Time. LibertyRadioNetwork.com, etc. I'm talking with Sam Husseini about his piece, Sanders Screwy Middle or you'd think I could say Mideast by now. Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy, and it's about Bernie Sanders and how little he's had to say about foreign policy. And then when he does talk, it's this madness about how the Saudis ought to invade Iraqi Sunnistan to get rid of our Islamic State problem, which makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, one thing, well, there's a lot of things we could, a lot of different directions to go here, but one thing about Rand Paul, about Jim Webb, about Bernie Sanders, all these guys right now who I think we all know better than the stupid crap that they say about foreign policy, they could all be doing really great right now. They are all blowing a perfect opportunity. You know, even by 2008, Giuliani's 9/11 shtick was already old. I mean, they beat that thing completely to death. And any honest human who takes a look at America's Middle East policy can see just it's totally foobar. The entire thing is contradictory and ridiculous, and we're fighting for Iran and Iraq, but we're fighting for Al-Qaeda against Iran and Syria, and for and against both in Yemen, and people are dying in huge numbers, and it's madness, and stop it, and how in the world can you justify it? Lindsey Graham right now is at 0%, because that's what even conservatives think about the empire in the Middle East right now. And nobody will get out there and be Ron Paul about it and say, just come home, forget it. Be Switzerland from now on.
Yeah.
Just blowing the opportunity. I mean, Jim Webb, Bernie Sanders, any of these guys, if they would come out screaming and yelling about it and fight about the empire right now, they could, you know, I don't know if they could win over power, but they could win, you know, millions of supporters among the population and win over more and more people to peace anyway.
Right. And I think part of it is, you know, a feeling about and a knowledge about what how deranged U.S. foreign policy has been, and part of it is just simply looking for authenticity. So you get, you know, people are now gravitating, in, I think, in largely in desperation to Trump simply because he seems like he's somebody who's, you know, at least saying what he thinks, however twisted that might be.
Right.
I think, I mean, the question in my mind is to what extent are they blowing it, or do they calculate that if they were to do that, and even if it were to resonate among the public, that they'll get pounded by the dominant corporate media?
Whatever, they're all going to lose anyway. So what?
Well, yeah. Well,
that's,
I mean,
the whole
will
thing
they lose,
it,
or will,
you know?
They, will they get? Yeah, this is the, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think you're right, and I would one up you in that, you know, if we want to look at, you know, electoral strategies, you know, going forward here. There's a lot of commonalities on the, between the so-called left and the so-called right.
Sure.
And I mean, I set up a webpage a couple of election cycles ago that I tried to take a crack at. I don't know if we've ever talked about this, Scott. VotePact.org, which encourages people to team up. You know, I mean, you know, the thing that keeps, you know, disenchanted Republicans in shackles is saying, oh, I got to vote for the Republican because I can't stand the Democrat. And Democrats in shackles, I can't stand the Republican, I got to vote for the Democrat. So pair up and siphon votes from each of the establishment candidates in twos, mm-hmm. In pairs, to an authentic independent run that is based on, you know, reasonable principles of foreign policy, of restoring constitutional rights, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a real opening for that going forward, you know, in the general election. But, I mean, I wonder if, you know, if candidates are concerned that if they were to articulate that kind of thing, that they would just, I mean, they wouldn't just lose the election, they'd get drummed out of public life. you know, it would just be nonstop ridicule.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that those fear, I mean, basically it's like this. They got to appease power. And right. So the masses of votes don't mean nothing if you can't afford to advertise to them anyway.
Yeah,
and
but
so
I mean, there is a substantial opening here. I mean, it's restricted in many ways, but you have the internet, you have independent media, you know, there and you have the possibility of fundraising. Like you said, Ron Paul, I had some disagreements with Ron Paul, but I thought on a lot of foreign policy stuff, on a lot of the, you know, the surveillance state and constitutional stuff, as well as trade. I mean, there's a lot of issues of agreement between left and right. He was great, and he was able to raise money.
Yeah.
You know, he was able to raise millions of dollars in money bombs and stuff like that, which Rand Paul hasn't been able to do nearly as effectively so far. And I think in part it's exactly what you're saying, that he has not really taken the positions, and he certainly hasn't been articulate about it in terms of stop the empire, restore constitutional rights, and so on.
Yeah. All right. Now, so what has Bernie Sanders had to say? I mean, he's been in the Senate a long time, and I admit I just haven't watched him that much. He's just another Democratic senator to me. But can you tell us what's his record on, you know, the rest of Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Libya, Syria interventions?
Sure.
I know he was against Iraq in 2003.
He voted against Iraq in 2003. He was for the Kosovo bombing in 1999, and one of his main staffers resigned as a result of that and put out a letter attacking it. People can find that on the web. He was against the Libya bombing by Obama and NATO, and he did back the original invasion of Afghanistan. And he hasn't, you know, he's sort of hemmed and hawed about it, you know, Bush, you know, didn't do it right and so on, but he hasn't, you know, sort of recanted that part of it. He's been...
On Afghanistan, has he expressed any concern that we're still there and that he would like to go ahead and call this thing off now?
Very much. I haven't seen that. I would sort of expect him to if asked, but I haven't seen that. No, you're right. I haven't seen him say that.
All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, he's been, you know, he signed off on the standard thing backing Israel's bombing of Gaza last year, but he was the first senator to say that he wouldn't be there when Netanyahu addressed the Senate recently. I don't know if he ended up being the only senator, but he was the first one to say, I'm out of here.
And he's endorsed the Iran deal, but is he really good on it? Do you know?
On what?
On the Iran deal. Has he made a big issue out of
He hasn't made a huge issue, but he's definitely for it. Oh. I don't think that he's, you know, he's sort of challenged Hillary Clinton on the, you know, Keystone Pipeline and a couple of other things. I don't think he's gone to the mat on the Iran deal as yet, but he's definitely expressed support for it.
That's good on the pipeline. I mean, that thing is a private property destroying monster right there. That's crazy. That's
right.
That's Trumpism right there. So that's good that he's good on that. That's a big one too. That's not nothing.
Yeah, yeah. He's been good on it, and he, you know, sort of forced Clinton to, you know, at least sort of pose as being for it for the time being. So yeah.
All right, and then that's good. He's for the Iran nuclear deal, and then on Israel Palestine, I guess I read that he's for a two-state solution, but. What do you think of President Sanders? Would he, you know, make an issue, try to force it?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to read the tea leaves. I mean, I you know, I'm always wary of saying somebody's for a two-state solution. I mean, everybody says they're for it. Netanyahu says he's for a two-state solution. It's not meaningful.
Well, and apparently Kerry really tried in good faith, but just didn't have the backing from the president and had completely, you know, obstinate Israelis, and it would have taken real pressure from Obama to make them get out of Kerry's way, and he didn't do it, so.
Right. But that's, you know, ultimately that ends up being your position in a way. If you can't, you know, if you're in a position of power and you can't do it, or you don't want to expend the political capital to do it, then it's not really a position. It's a rhetorical.
A slogan, yeah.
Right. But he did... You know, I mean, he had some mild criticism in terms of disproportionate and so on, but he signed off on the resolution that virtually all members of Congress in such a circumstance sign off on when Israel was bombing Gaza for 50-some-odd days last year. He signed off on that as well as most of the rest of the established members of Congress. It's reading tea leaves right now. I mean, people have gone back and found statements from him that were fairly critical of U.S. foreign policy, fairly critical of Israel.
Well, now he's touring around. Is he not taking questions, or nobody's asking?
Oh no, he's taken. He didn't take my question when he was last in D.C., but he's been taking some questions.
But I guess from the media or from regular people, and are regular people not pressing him on this stuff?
Maybe it's more constrained than I'm seeing. I mean, I'm not necessarily out there in Iowa and so on, so I'm not sure how many questions he's taking. But I haven't seen a lot of people raise stuff. Now look, I mean, when the Black Lives Matter folks got into his face, he changed.
Yeah.
You know, he's making that part of his stump speech,
right.
And I think that's what people got to do. You know,
right.
to raise issues of peace and justice. Politicians are ultimately wind vanes, and it's ultimately up to movements to make them move in the way that they need to move. So I think that's part of the dynamic that has to happen here.
Yep. And yeah, you know, like you're saying, there's a huge realignment just waiting to happen here. We're not the worst of the left and right getting together, like conservative
right.
Democrat Clinton or liberal
exactly.
Republican Bush, but the best of the left and the right in a Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich kind of way.
Exactly.
And I guess, you know, I liked past tense to think that we could at least maybe have something like a watered down version of that, at least rhetorically, between Rand Paul and Jim Webb. And make the argument, I mean, my way is, you know, we should have the Democratic Republicans should be the party of the people, and then we should just have the war party of death and taxes for power, for the bankers and the arms dealers and all the special interests. And then at least it'll be clear who's on whose side. We want peace and our Bill of Rights, and they want to take all our money and kill all the Arabs with it. And now we know who's who. And then that way, and they could insist it might be funny if they did it right, that Jeb should just run as Hillary's running mate, because
right.
These guys are the centrist extremists, and hey, we're the centrist moderates. We're tired of all this extremism and want to get along, right? Really realign. And now, I mean, that's not like they'd get anywhere and win as a, you know, independent candidacy, but it sure could, you know, help people, I think, you know, confuse them and then straighten them right out about what priorities are most important to us and what we really agree on. And it's just, especially now with the economy the way it is, Sam, it's such a shame to see, you know, like right-wing militia guys and whatever getting more and more racist and more angry at powerless minorities and left-wingers getting more and more angry and scared of powerless right-wingers, when the problem is power. That's who's the enemy, and it should be really the 99%, not meaning the fringe of the left, but really the 99% versus the state and the private interests that own it and vice versa. I mean, that's our enemy, and it's a tragedy we continue on like this with regular people hating each other while they keep going to the bank with all our money.
Right. And that's, you know, the Wall Street bailouts was another great left-right issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, what I usually call it, you know, they're the establishment center and there's an anti-establishment center. You know, we can't determine, you know, who Jeb Bush's running mate is, although what you're saying makes perfect sense. But we can, if we can get organized by the time of the election, try to get behind somebody or buddies who can manifest that, who an authentic conservative and an authentic leftist can both get behind and say, I'm not going to vote for the leftist can say, I'm not going to vote for whoever the Democratic Party puts forward. I got someplace to go.
Yeah,
you know, someplace meaningful to go.
And the real crisis is we don't. I mean, the real crisis is the best we have would be Sanders and Rand, and they suck. And they do nothing but run toward that establishment center seeking approval and pandering to them and betraying everybody else. So who are we left with? Nothing. Ron's retired. You know?
Right. Ron's retired, but, you know, it's a big country with millions of people. and I think that, you know,
but when we're talking about presidents, we have governors and senators running for president.
Right.
That's about it, you know.
Right. But, you know, know, there are, you know, there are lots of retired senators. There are lots of people who are, you know, who have a public persona who could be brought into the public arena to be the face of such a movement.
Sure would like to see it. Well, yeah. And I appreciate the background knowledge for knowing better who to oppose and why.
Yeah.
That comes first. Finding somebody to support comes later. But hey, listen, thanks so much for coming on the show. I've already kept you over time here. I'll let you go, but I sure appreciate it, Sam.
Great to be with you, Scott.
All right, Joe. That's Sam Husseini. He is at the Institute for Public Accuracy, and this one is at consortiumnews.com, Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy.
Hey, all, Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Yeah, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Libertarian foreign policy, Mosley. ScottHorton.org for the archives. Almost 4,000 interviews now. I think the rule is once it gets to 3,900... then I can just go ahead and say almost 4,000 interviews now at scotthorton.org. Another month or so. And, you know, I kind of think that maybe at 4,000 I should quit and find something else to do. Go back to writing. Well, I don't know if I can make enough money at that. I don't know. 4,000 seems like a lot. All right. Well, anyway, so yeah, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Plenty to talk about in the news here, man. Plenty of BS to debunk. How about this? Suspect arrested in 1996 Saudi bombing that killed 19 U.S. airmen. The head of Saudi Hezbollah's military wing was detained in connection with the attack, reports a Saudi daily. He was arrested in Beirut. Ahmad Ibrahim al-Mughassil. He didn't do it. Osama did it. Osama and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed did it. And because Louis Free blamed it on the Iranian-backed Saudi Hezbollah, Osama and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed both got away with it clean. Fun little alternate history there. And also, you know, maybe it could also be said that the American people were denied an opportunity to be exposed to the motive of our enemy. Why would Iran back Saudi Hezbollah to bomb American barracks in Saudi Arabia unless it was just a target of opportunity? But that's not just what it was. It was a symbolic target. It was American airmen whose job it was to bomb Iraq from America's bases in Saudi Arabia, the land of Mecca and Medina, the Holy Peninsula, where Mohammed is from. And Gareth Porter and Michael Scheuer both, and Scheuer being the former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, have proved this. In fact, you can also read Rudy's Ties to a Terror Sheik in the Village Voice from, say, I don't know, 2008 or 2009. And it's about how Al Thani, Well, there are a couple of different Althanis. I forgot which the guy's first name was, whatever. But he had property right adjacent. The sheik did. Had property right there adjacent to the barracks, very close by. And the reporter for the Village Voice, and I interviewed him about it too, he showed that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and bin Laden were there just before the attack. And for political reasons, of course, the Saudis denied it. And, of course, the Israel lobby wanted to blame it on Iran. And so good little Louis Free, dog on a leash, head of the FBI, went ahead and blamed it on Iran. And now they're still sticking with it. It's 2015. It's 19 years later. And they're arresting this guy that they're pinning it on. When we all already know it was Osama that did it. In fact, you might remember the anecdote. This was the part that made the news even more than the killing of the kids. The young men at the time. Was at a public speech, Bill Clinton was running for re-election, and at an event, a lady yelled to Bill Clinton, "You suck!" And it was based on the lousy security. After Beirut 83, how can you leave men in barracks in a Middle Eastern country where there are possible hostiles around and not have armed guards with machine guns preventing truck bombings, for God's sake? "You suck, Bill Clinton," she yelled, and Bill Clinton had his SS goons lock her in a cage just overnight, but still, for daring to just insult him. His Holiness, His Majesty, our leader, who, in fact, just like she said, sucked, and put these guys out there and left them high and dry. I mean, they were combatants, but still, they're Americans, and he's responsible for them. He's the commander-in-chief of the Army and the Navy, and I think that includes the Air Force and the Marines, too, guys. But anyway, a lot of bogus plots blamed on Iran, because that's what Israel wants. And you know what that means? That means that the Al-Qaeda guys who actually killed those 19 airmen got away with it. Got away with it. It's like when your local cops pin a murder on somebody who didn't do it. The guy that did do it got away with it. They don't care. It's just politics, man. Anyway. What's funny is, you know they didn't believe their own crap, because if they did, they would have bombed Iran. You sent Hezbollah to blow up 19 of our airmen, bomb you. Think they wouldn't have shot at least a few cruise missiles or something? They're lying their asses off. Anyway, hardly anybody cared anyway. It's amazing. All right, now Nancy Youssef, formerly with McClatchy, now at the Daily Beast. And, you know, I have my problems with her co-author, Shane Harris. I think he's a bit of a hawkish guy. And, I get my Noahs confused, I'm sorry. Noah Schachman, who I used to interview from time to time when he was back at Foreign Policy, he's now, I think, the editor over there at the Daily Beast, at least on their Foreign Policy stuff. And he seems more hawkish than he used to be, I don't know. But I still like Nancy. She does good journalism, so I'm going to ignore the fact of who her editor and co-author are and give her credit. I'll believe it because it has her name on it. That's the point. Oh, and also because it's so plausible. Obama's brass pressured us to downplay ISIS threat. U.S. intelligence analysts keep saying that the American-led campaign against ISIS isn't going so well. Their bosses keep telling them to think again about those conclusions. And it talks about how, hey, there are some goalposts, and you can't say it's failing, but you can maybe say it's working moderately only or something. And it looks like, you know, because politically, the president has decided he's just going to kick this can down the road until it's somebody else's problem. As George W. Bush once said, withdraw from Iraq? Well, that will be up to future presidents to decide. And I think Obama took that one to heart. Let somebody else deal with figuring out what to do there. So we're just going to keep bombing them and keep bombing them. Despite what Bernie Sanders wants, the Saudis aren't going to invade, and that's stupid. What the hell is he talking about? It's a very weak state. It's surrounded by enemies, but seems to have staying power, and none of their enemies really want to do anything about them, or can. The Kurds want to keep them out of Kurdistan, but they don't want to invade and sack Raqqa and Mosul, and they can't. Same thing for the Iranian-backed Shiite militias. They're attacking, and what's left of the Iraqi army, I guess just the so-called Golden Division, Special Forces Brigades. Those guys are laying siege to Fallujah and Ramadi right now, but they're not accomplishing anything. They're not taking territory. They're not taking territory, and they're not occupying it. They're not driving the Islamic State out. I mean, they're there, which is amazing in itself, I guess, but doesn't seem to be doing them any good. But, oh no, they killed Osama in 2011, so don't worry about it. You don't need to worry about anything that happened after that, okay?
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the Dang Show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show. It's the Scott Horton Show here on Liberty Radio Network. See, I got the harmonicas fixed. Remember how the harmonicas were messed up? Improved harmonicas. All right. Hey, let's talk about the cops. Because I'm afraid if I don't do it now, I might get too distracted. I'll get back to the jihadi wars here in a minute, man. But oh, let me say real quick, because the break interrupted me. I didn't mean to sound like I'm scaremongering, warmongering against the Islamic State, but I am into what's true. And what's true is, yeah, they're pretty powerful, man, and they're making a state there, and there's really no one around them who can take them out. And if people say that they got tens and tens and tens of thousands of guys, I'm saying, yeah, that's true. And if people are saying bombing them all day, every day is not destroying them, then I'm going to say, yeah, of course. That doesn't mean I'm saying, so we should send in ground troops. Because I'm not. I don't want anybody to get that impression. Because, you know, people fill in gaps their own way, and I just want to make sure which way you fill yours in. I'm saying call it off. I do care. But I am not willing to do anything about, I'm not willing to tolerate the American government doing anything about the existence of the Islamic State. We should not relish them killing each other, but we should, I think we gotta understand at this point that letting the locals work it out is going to lead to the least killing over the long term. It was American, you know, white, Christian, North American intervention over there that distorted the power in all different directions and led to all this backlash. Don't you get it? So now stop. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying stop all along, but also now. If you go back in time and stop then that would be okay too. All right, now police state stuff. The license plate data. Did you see yesterday the shooter that killed the murderer, the evil guy that killed the two people? The cops said they used license plate readers on the freeway to figure out to find his rental car and nail him. Or actually, I'm not certain of that, but at least they said that they tried. I don't know whether they said that was actually what led to him or not, but I was just reading the closed captioning on the quiet TV in the background during the show yesterday. But here's this thing about how you might not even think about this. You're driving, living your life, just paying attention to your life. You don't even think about how, yeah, in Oakland, California, they are saving everywhere you were and whenever you were, if you're out there in your car. And you can see the slippery slope right there, man. Get a little bit lost and have to turn around a few times, and all of a sudden you're suspicious behavior, and what the hell are you doing around here? Or maybe you want to drive around talking with your friend or smoking a joint or whatever. The totalitarian, the electronic grid for the implementation of full totalitarianism is being erected all around us. And, you know, it's funny because I first saw license plate cameras down in Houston. I mean, I knew they were coming as early as 94, but I think I first saw them in Houston in probably 1997. They had them where they're over the freeway, angled down for the license plates. And they call them traffic cameras, but no, they had traffic cameras too that were for the kind of broad view of what are the traffic patterns right now. Different question than which car is in them, but which car is where. And they're just saving this and saving this. And here in Oakland, they decided that they're going to have to start deleting all the information after 6 months because their hard drive keeps crashing and they don't have the money to buy a new hard drive. If they had the hard drives, they would just save this information forever and nobody's stopping them. As though they put a chip in your butt, but it's just virtual, you know? The chip is in their computer. It doesn't have to be in you. Same thing as this. I think I mentioned this yesterday. Heartbeat as biometric from Schneier on security. Everybody's heartbeat is a little bit unique. And so they can pick you out of a crowd. Same way with your walk or obviously your biometric facial features. An iris scan if they can get close enough. Any of that. All right. In more Technopoly news, North Dakota becomes first state to legalize drones weaponized with tasers, tear gas, rubber bullets, and sound cannons. Jesus Christ. Who do they need that for in North Dakota? The Indians? For Christ's sake, man. Did I just say that twice? For Christ's sake. What are they doing? What are we doing? It's just like Postman said, if it can be invented and implemented at a reasonable price, then that's it. It's on. Soon, everyone will have to have a mandatory micro drone that follows them around and keeps track of all of their, vitals. And reports back to Central Command on all of us all day, every day. And if you turn yours off, they'll kill you. That'll be, what, 2-3 years from now? Probably. Okay, a little bit longer than that. I went to Fry's Electronics. They're selling drones in the parking lot. And I hear that buzz, and I'm thinking, yeah, man, this is my future. This is our future. Like Gazans, only without, you know, more of an annoyance than absolute terror. Well, for now, anyway. Surveillance drones over our towns, over our cities, over our neighborhoods. From now on, it's only just begun. And then, you know, I think it was Carson. One of these Republicans was calling for Hellfire missile strikes. Armed drones on the Texas border with Mexico. Because supposedly, you know, terrorists are teaching them how to build terror tunnels for sneaking across the border. Really? They're tunneling under the Rio Grande, huh? Somebody prove that, please. Doesn't matter. Come on, let's put Hellfire missiles on armed Reaper drones and let's just get to killing. Afghanistan slaughter's too far away to be any fun. And then I mentioned this on the Tucker Show the other day, Eye on the Empire. The self-driving cars, the RAND Corporation has already done a study way out ahead on, yes, of course, the government will have total control of your self-driving car. And they will just will it to pull over and it will pull over. Won't be up to you. And if they want to move your car because they say it's an emergency or whatever, they'll just tell your car to go and park somewhere else. And this, that, the other, they're already way ahead of you on all this stuff. You won't even really own your own car in any meaningful way anymore. And then, man, that's just all the high-tech police state stuff. Here's one about Denver police harassing jury nullification activists a day after a federal judge made them stop, quote-unquote, made them stop. A whole mess of police killings right after this.
This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most. Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom, fff.org/subscribe.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hope you like the new old bumper music again here. All right, so, one more on the high-tech police state before we get to the low-tech. Police secretly track cell phones to solve routine crimes. Baltimore. And what happened is they've been using the stingrays for all kinds of stuff. And, of course, these are all in the name of terrorism and this and that. But they use them to, I'm sure, to go fishing, too. But they use them all the time, and they really had no power to do so. And so what happens is here... there was a kidnapping charge. A guy who had kidnapped his girlfriend's daughters, ages 3 and 5, and then held them for ransom and threatened to kill the older daughter. They dropped those charges and let him go. What? To cover up that they had used the cell phone tracker to find him. Which at least they rescued the little girls okay. But they couldn't have got a warrant for that. In fact, no, they used to get search warrants, but then they decided, ah, screw it. We don't need search warrants anymore. So then when it came to covering it up, they let a guy off on an irrelevant, reduced, separate charge. After something that should have cost him decades. Who disagrees with me that a guy who kidnaps toddlers and threatens to kill them automatically goes somewhere for a long time where he's got no right to do nothing but, you know, squats. The hell is this? So anyway, there's your lawless government. They don't give a damn about you. They don't give a damn about you or your tiny kids or anybody else except themselves. All right, now check this out. Are you one of the guys who justified the murder of Sam Dubose? Because... well, he shouldn't have drove away because he was dragging the cop down the street. To think I wasted 15 minutes of my life or more arguing with these ridiculous people on Twitter. These conservatives who love government more than any communist you've ever met in your life. Love government more than a Maoist. nuh-uh, because he was dragging the cop down the street. That's funny, because I'm looking at the video and I don't see the cop being dragged anywhere at all. Well, now, check out what a stupid idiot loser you are. The cop claims it was an accident. The cop doesn't claim he was justified. The cop claims his new gun had a lighter trigger. So, that means that every American civilian who defended the cop who murdered that kid for driving off, kid pulled over for driving without a license plate. Remember the libertarian lesson. All government, everything, is ultimately backed up by the threat of death. If you resist them, they will kill you, even over a license plate, even over a barber's license, even over the most innocuous thing that you can think that government does, collecting taxes. Is that innocuous enough? In the eyes of most Americans, I guess it is. They'll kill you if you refuse to submit to their authority. That's what government is. Although in this case, the courts really have ruled that no, running away isn't a good enough reason to kill somebody. In fact, they ruled it was a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights because it counts as a seizure of your life. Huh? Whatever, dude. Okay. I would have gone with the Fifth Amendment there or something, but all right. Isn't that funny? I get it, sort of. But yeah, every American civilian, toady, pathetic little weasel Smithers, who defended this cop, his excuse is it wasn't his fault, his gun went off. So, how low and pathetic are you? Really pathetic. Oh, my master, he only beats me sometimes. Alright, now this one. Cops shot and killed unarmed Jason Alderman for holding a car jack that looked like a gun. Bakersfield, California. Oh, I thought it was a rifle. I was afraid for my life. Oh, he reached for his waistband. Police union defends cop who shot and killed unarmed John Gear in his home with his hands up. Poor Adam Torres, the cop that killed this guy. What a hard time this has been for him. What? I can't believe any person who is not a government employee would agree that government employees have the right to unionize. Seriously. You make Smithers look like Burns. You're so pathetic. Public servants, they're your masters and you love it and you support it. And if they had any less power and influence and stature over you, you wouldn't have it. Vote Trump. Who needs freedom when we got power we can identify with? Get him. Get him. Father says video proves. Home security video proves. Julian Hoffman surrendered with his hands up. Officers shot and killed him anyway. That one's from New Jersey. Now, remember this kid who supposedly his girlfriend, they did a sting operation to get Zachary Hammond. They did a sting operation. He's 19 years old. They did a sting operation to trick his girlfriend into buying a little bit of weed, to entrap her into buying a little bit of weed. They show up, they murder this kid. They shot him twice in the back, and then they lied. And said, oh, they tried to run us over. Waistband, run us over. And yet the kid shot twice in the back. He was shot through the rear window, the open rear window of the car. the two bullets entered just inches apart. So, no, the car was stationary at the time that the cop executed the boy for being near a girl who'd been entrapped into buying a little bit of grass. And now, what's the police department going to do about this? They hire a PR firm to spin it and tell you about how the police, they're the real victims. The poor little dears. You know what? People hate them for no reason. It must be that the people of America are all, I mean, the ones who don't worship them, are all criminals. Because it sure as hell couldn't be anything that they've done. Here's another one where, let's see the guy's name. The family's suing, trying to get the video of the police murder of their loved one, Richard Scheuermann, the third, has sued to try to get access to the video that the cops say exonerates their guys for killing this guy. But even according to their story, he had a knife and he was in his truck. He didn't. They're not even saying he lunged at them with his knife. So it sounds like they murdered him and they're covering it up and the judge is helping him cover it up. I'm not even done. Joshua Thomas was putting down a pellet gun that killed him. That one's in Texas, here in Texas.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And, yeah, man, did you guys hear this clip of, it's from the Hugh Hewitt Show. It's a couple of minutes here. I guess I'll play the whole thing. It's Hugh Hewitt, who's a conservative host, and I don't know whether he's taken a pro or anti-Trump position, but he's clearly being very fair to Trump here. He's playing devil's advocate and providing Trump an opportunity to explain, and it doesn't quite work out the way I think Hewitt had hoped. But so listen here.
Here's my tough question. In tough times, republics turn to tough men. It's happened throughout history. Caesar, Napoleon, the last century had a lot of republics fail, and I don't have to invoke Goodwin's Law and go that far, but are you tickling that temptation in democracies that they go for tough guys in tough times? And it's called the authoritarian temptation. Is that what's playing for Trump?
Well, I think we've had very weak people. I think we have very weak people even running. I look at some of the people that are running, and I think they're not strong people, and they're good people. I'm not saying they're not good people, I think, but I think it is time to have tough, smart people. If you look at China, if you look at some of these countries that are just eating our lunch, they have tough, smart people. It's time that we have tough, smart people, because we're not going to be able to go much longer the way we're going right now. We owe 18 trillion. By the way, that 18 trillion is going to be about 21 trillion very quickly. You know, it's going to build right now from this point very, very rapidly. We're not doing well, that I can tell you.
When people say Trump will be an authoritarian once he gets power, he won't give it back, what's the response going
to
be?
Well, no, I just want to make the country great again. I'm not looking to do this. I have a wonderful life. People say,
yes,
why
you
are
do.
You even doing it? I love my life. I love what I've done. I built a great company. But I want to make this country great again. I owe a lot to this country, and I want to make it great again. And we can do it. And honestly, it cannot continue to go like this. Otherwise, there'll be a point at which you can't bring it back.
But you'll play by the rules if you win.
100%. 100%.
The Constitution. The Constitution. You wouldn't. Executive orders.
Obama doesn't play. I mean, he goes out.
Exactly.
And he signs his executive orders all over the place because he doesn't want to meet with people and try and convince them to do what the right thing to do is. No, he's not playing by the rules. No, I do play by the rules. I will play by the rules too.
Donald Trump.
All right, so that's Donald Trump on the Hugh Hewitt Show from yesterday, and I guess probably you noticed the same things about it as me, maybe more and better things than I noticed, but what I noticed really was Hugh Hewitt had to really put words in his mouth to get him to agree that, I don't know if anybody was really thinking as far ahead as, you know, this guy would refuse to leave office after 4 or 8 years. I hadn't really considered that. I just thought he would be an extremely, you know, powerful executive president, and I hate those. But, like, really turn the country into a dictatorship, cancel even the pretense of the Constitution and the permanent institutions it created back when. I mean, come on, I don't think anybody's really saying that. But so then that ends up having to be what Hugh Hewitt puts as the, I mean, you're not going to overthrow and turn America into a lawless totalitarian dictatorship where you become leader for life, right, Trump? And she's like, oh, yeah, no, that? No, of course I wouldn't do that. But that took 2 and 3 follow-ups to get him to say, oh, yeah, no, of course there are limits. But the lead-in question, he really went for it with the lead-in. He didn't say, like, hey, man, you seem a bit bossy there, Donald. How respectful are you of the rule of law anyway? He said, republics choose strongmen. Like what happened in Rome, like what happened over and over again. Right? He could have said Germany. He could have said a lot of places. Maybe he did say Germany, too. In tough times, people sometimes make the mistake of choosing a fascist leader who cancels their republic and turns their country into a fascist authoritarian dictatorship. And people are worried, Donald, that maybe that's what you represent, is some kind of future, some kind of strong man. So the whole question is set up for Donald to back down and say, no, of course not. Listen, man, I just want to be good at it. That's all. I think I could be a lot better president than the other guys. But his answer is, we need someone strong. They have fascism in China, and they're eating our lunch, whatever exactly that means. And so we need a strong person, too. Everyone else is weak. We need someone strong. And then you think maybe he's saying a lot of things like that in order to then say, now that being said, it's not like I'm going to repeal the Constitution or anything. You know, I just want to be, I just think I could be a great manager. That's all. Right. He wasn't building up to, on the other hand. That was it. That was his statement. Hey, Donald, people are looking at the example of the Roman Republic turning into an evil empire and destroying itself, and they're afraid that that's what you might do. And his answer is, we need someone strong. Man, I guess I'm not that good of a rhetorician. I would have come up with a greater way to just go over all this and a little bit more punchy kind of get you thinking my way here, but you see what I mean? That's kind of... Usually he says something funny, but that wasn't funny. You know, I don't know. It kind of shows how stupid he is too, right? That he couldn't understand. He was not picking up what Hugh Hewitt was putting down, man. You know, Earth to Donald. Explain that you're just going to be another president. Just a really good one, but you're not going to be changing the title of the office. You're not going to be presidente for life. You're not going to abolish the Congress, right? You know, Lindsey Graham said, I would send the army to occupy Congress and force them to pass the appropriation for the military. He actually said that. I wonder if that probably actually doesn't have anything to do with why he's in last place, right? And also, I'm sorry, I wanted to give credit to this guy, Keegan Steffen. It's Keegan NYC on Twitter. And he's one of these who does a real good job of keeping track of police murders. And that whole long list of police murders I just read to you there, virtually all of them. I think, yeah, all of them came from his Twitter feed from just yesterday. And this is all just in the past few days, man, this stuff. I mean, some of them are family reactions and lawsuits a year later, whatever. It's going on all day, every day. Cops killing people. I read a thing even by Michael Brendan Doherty, the conservative, in The Week, where he's even blaming the armed population for police behavior. That police are ready for a shootout at any time. But that is just not true, dude. What would have to be true for that to be true or that they're justified in feeling that way, would be the argument that regular gun owners are ready to draw on a cop at any time, which is crazy. In fact, of course, most, probably even super majorities of gun owners are people who are law and order conservatives who couldn't imagine a circumstance where they would be firing on a cop ever. Hell, most hardened criminals aren't that stupid. But the average Joe with a firearm would rather kill and die than go to jail tonight and get out tomorrow? Nuh-uh. What are they talking about? They're crazy. They're paranoid, schizophrenic lunatics, if that's what they think, that the average Joe is trying to kill them. Who told them that? What cartoons are they watching? Where this is what they believe. Gee, that's funny. You know, a year ago, I had a job where I was a civilian, and I was around regular people all the time, and none of them were preparing to murder cops. Never met anybody who killed a cop before. Never met anybody who seriously contemplated it. What universe is this? Where the cops are being shot at, where people are trying to kill them every day. It's such a lie. A cop is far more likely to kill an innocent person than an innocent person is likely to kill any other innocent person. And probably a million times more likely than a regular civilian is to kill a cop. That's insane. I mean, I guess it makes good propaganda if you need your budget increased. But when you tell the cops that it's true and they believe it, look how dangerous they become. Oh, also part of their training is, don't worry, no matter what you do, you'll never get in trouble for it, ever. So, do your worst, have fun out there, see if you can pick a fight with somebody bad enough that you can kill them and get away with it.